You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
An incredible boy. An incredible boy. You know, I call my son, John David, my wonder boy. I call my little girl, angel girl, because that's what they are to me, a wonder boy and an angel girl. 14 now, but they're a boy and a girl to me. That's how I'm going to probably always see them. I've got a father with me right now that sees his 21-year-old son, Jason, as his wonder boy. And I want to find him.
21-year-old Jason Landry was driving home from San Marcos to visit his parents in the Houston area on the night of December 13th, a trip that was mysteriously cut short. The Caldwell County Sheriff's Office says a volunteer firefighter found Landry's abandoned car on Salt Flat Road in Luling.
Investigators trying to find a Texas State University student after they found his car crashed near Luling just after midnight last night. Loved ones say Jason Landry was on his way to the Houston area for the holidays, but did not make it home. Now they're hoping someone finds him.
How do you have a crash car and you're not in it? How does that happen? Where is 21-year-old Jason Landry? With me, an all-star panel to try to make sense of this seemingly senseless situation. Dr. Angela Arnold, renowned psychiatrist, joining me out of Atlanta. You can find her at AngelaArnoldMD.com. High-profile lawyer joining me out of Atlanta as well, Randy Kessler, Emory Law Professor, author of Divorce, Protect Yourself, Your Kids, and Your Future. And you can find Randy at ksfamilylaw.com. No stranger to a courtroom. Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, star of a brand new hit series on True Crime Network, Poisonous Liaison. Death investigator Joseph Scott Morgan, senior digital forensic examiner, counterintelligence, president, CEO of National Digital Forensics. Wow, Giovanni Masucci is with us. Special guest joining us, Cheryl LaPointe, cousin of the victim in this case, the young man we were looking for. She's a genetic genealogist, the Gene Hunter at thegenehunter.com. And I mean G-E-N-E, not blue jeans. Very special guest joining me, Kent Landry. You can find Kent on Facebook at facebook.com/findjasonlandry. But straight to Alexis Tereshchuk, crimeonline.com, investigative reporter, also with leadstories.com. Alexis, I don't understand how a young man who has finally decided on his calling. His dream was to be a sound engineer, and he was a new student at Texas State University. Everything going on all cylinders. Everything's fine. He leaves around 10 p.m.-ish at night to drive home to his parents for Christmas, and he never shows up. What can you tell me about those facts, Alexis Tereshchuk?
So it was December 13th, just last year, right a little bit after 10 o'clock. He leaves 10:55 to drive home. It's only a three-hour drive to his parents. He's going, you know, he had to finish up school. You got to wrap up stuff at the end of the semester. And he's going to go home for Christmas break. Gets in the car. He chats on the phone with one of his friends. What every normal person does. Suspicious.
He chats on the phone with a friend. Is that on a cell phone? Yes, of course.
Yes.
And the conversation was normal, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Nothing wrong. Looking forward to Christmas. And what time was that conversation, mm-hmm. Alexis? I'm trying to build a timeline.
It was shortly before 10:55 p.m.
Now, you know, the reality is for a young guy this age, 21-year-old college student, hopping at the car at 10:30, 10:45 to drive home to your parents, that's no big deal. A lot of us may say, wow, that's too late to be on the road. Not for a 21-year-old guy heading home for Christmas holidays. You just heard our friends Rebecca Thomas at Fox 7 Austin and our friends at KVUE ABC. But take a listen to Jacob Raskin, KRPC Houston.
Jason's father, Kent, the senior pastor at a Presbyterian church in Missouri City, as well as Jason's older brother and many other extended family members and friends, have been searching alongside investigators all day. Many wondering why would he have left his belongings in the car. His father tells me he believes Jason probably suffered a concussion.
Maybe he doesn't even know who he is. Maybe he's hurt. He was in a car accident, but he's not with the car, and we just don't know. So any help would be greatly appreciated.
Let's go straight out to this young man, Jason Landry's dad, joining us right now. It's Kent Landry. And again, please go to facebook.com/findJasonLandry or go to crimeonline.com to see photos and find out more. Kent, tell me what happened when you knew he was on his way home, correct?
Not that morning, actually. I knew he was coming home. So I have three kids. They're my oldest, their big sister was, she works in Chicago, and she was coming home. And the two boys, one's at A&M and one's at Texas State, were both waiting until their big sister gets home before they headed home. They were both finishing up finals and then, you know, hanging out with friends and kind of finishing up everything for the semester before they headed home. So I knew Jason was coming home. I didn't know which particular day because he was also waiting for another friend to come into town first.
So you knew they were coming. How far of a drive is it from Texas State University? Did you live in a dorm or an apartment?
In an apartment.
How far is it from Jason's apartment to your home?
Depends on how fast you drive in traffic. Somewhere in the range of 2.5 to 3 hours.
Okay. Leaving at about 10 till 11 that night, he should have been home at least by 2:30 in the morning, and you didn't know he was coming, so you didn't realize anything was actually wrong until when?
So we got a call from the highway patrol at around 2 in the morning.
Tell me about that call, Mr. Landry.
Well, you know, I've gotten plenty of calls in the, you know, in the wee hours, whether when I was practicing law or as a pastor, that comes with the territory, so wasn't that unusual, but when it's the police and they call about your child, that's, you know, that's kind of the nightmare of any parent. You know, to all we were told is, you know, the car's crashed, he's not there, and we went back and forth with the officer, and I got in the car and drove there. I probably left within about 30 minutes of the first phone call to go see what I could find out.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we were talking about the phone call that no parent wants to get. When that phone rings at 2:00 in the morning and somebody tells you they found your boy's car crashed, but he's not in it. Along in a 2.5 hour ride, that strip of road, and nobody could find him. What do you do? I mean, to Dr. Angela Arnold, psychiatrist, I will never forget, and I've told this story, Jackie, you can close your ears, when my son, John David, went missing in a big superstore. It was a Babies R Us superstore, huge. And I had both of them with me, and I was looking for, of all things, organic suntan lotion. And I was down on the very bottom. They had shelves that I felt like they went up to the ceiling. And I looked and looked and looked. And I said, well, twins, I just can't find it. And I got up and turned around. There was Lucy and no John David. And in that moment, it felt like the whole world just stopped, Angela.
Oh, yeah. You know, Nancy, these are the kinds of things that when they happen, they shake us to the very core. they shake our sense of just security that we all have to live with on a daily basis. And now this poor boy is missing, and it sounds like there are no answers. So how can, I've lost my children in stores before, and you feel like you literally think your whole life passes in front of you, doesn't it, Nancy?
I just don't even have a clear recollection of thinking anything. It just felt like my whole body was outside my body. But I could hear myself screaming to lock the doors, and I had Lucy under one arm like a football, like Tom Brady running for the touchdown, but trying to find John David. Kent Landry is Jason's dad. He gets this call 2 a.m. and hears that his son's car is wrecked on the way home, but no son. You get in the car and you take off. What was going through your mind, Kent, as you were trying to get to that location?
Well, it's, I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's a nightmare you never wake up from. It was very surreal. Driving, you're trying to get there, trying to think of anything that could happen. And this is, Luling's a small town, between San Marcos. It's the reason you pass through Luling is to get to I-10, to get home. And trying to figure out, okay, well, what am I going to do to get there? Where was it? My wife stayed at home in case Jason called, and to find out, information from the officer and stuff like that. So it was, I don't really remember. It was a blur. I got there about 5 in the morning, and it was clear, cold, windy, and dark. And trying to find my son, trying to find anything, someone to talk to. 5 a.m. in the morning in small town, there's not a lot of people to talk to or even try to find where the accident is and stuff like that.
How did you find the crash?
Well, I knew the officer had told me who was going to be towing the car, the name of the tow truck company. I found their location online, put it in my phone. It said it was 24 hours a day, so I went directly there, and I found a tow truck driver there. And he said he wasn't the one who towed it, but he gave me the location. He said it's off this one of the highways that kind of runs out of town. So he gave me directions how to get there, and I'm running up and down this highway. And my wife, we have locators on our phone. She can watch where I am, and I knew where Jason's car was, where his phone was. It was in the storage lot at the parking at the tow truck place, but they wouldn't open it until 7 in the morning. So waiting before 7, I was going to see, go look for Jason. And Lisa was able to, I went down the wrong road first. I knew I couldn't see anything. So I called my wife and said, I don't think he's on this road. I'm almost to another town. Call the officer and find out exactly what the location was. When she called him, he was already in bed. He gave her the name of the road. We found it on the map, and was driving down that road at 5 a.m.
So let me understand, the officer, the investigator, got the car towed and then went to bed?
Yes.
Okay. I wish they hadn't towed the car just that fast. Joe Scott Morgan, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, and such a long list of credentials. I'm losing, my voice. So, Joe Scott, why did they tow the car? Well, I guess they come upon the car, they see a crash, they're told to tow it, and they don't realize that every tiny bit of evidence is important. What do we need to be looking at in that car?
Well, you have to, first thing I would be looking for personally is to see if there's any evidence of trauma that the driver may have sustained.
Blood. Oh, wait a minute. Let me get another fact for you, Joe Scott, to use. Alexis, yes, Tereshchuk, there was a crash, but a crash into what? Was it a single car incident, like into a tree or a fence, or was there another car involved?
The police have said they don't believe that there was another car involved. They think that something made Jason swerve, and he perhaps maybe hit somebody with the right
I'm sorry, the left front tire, the driver's side tire, and then the car spun around and maybe hit something else. But it, so far they haven't said, you know, what all of our minds would go to, like maybe somebody was chasing him and a car hit him, because the back of the car, the rear bumper is very damaged, as is the front.
Well, that's odd. Is that right, Kent Landry? The back of the car is damaged and the front left fender is damaged?
Yes, if you actually look at, there were no pictures taken by the officer at the scene of the accident. The only picture we have of the car, to my knowledge, is a picture taken by that young man who actually found the car, the volunteer fireman who was coming home. He lives down this road. He was coming home from, from a fire call. And saw the car, looked inside. There wasn't anyone there. I think he said he touched the hood. It was already cold, but it was in the 30s that night. And called it in and waited. So he waited the whole time that he was there. And the picture doesn't really show much damage. It's from the side. It's looking at the passenger side. Doesn't show a lot of damage to the trunk. And you can, of course, look at the pictures online. The car, as it is sitting in the tow lot, the rear end is significantly damaged.
And the front left fender.
Correct.
Well, that doesn't even make sense. If you have a crash, how do you get damage on the front left fender and the backside? And here's the really odd part to me. To Shira LaPointe, a genetic genealogist, founder of the Gene Hunter, and cousin of this family, Shira, his clothes.
Nancy, there are many more questions going through my head than there have been any answers. I just cannot make sense of any of this.
The clothes, Shira, Jason's clothes, where were they?
They were strewn in the road. His dad is the one who found his clothes about 900 yards from the crash scene.
Why are these clothes that obviously Jason was wearing strewn 900 yards from the wreck?
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, for those of you just joining us, please help us. Let me give you the tip line for Caldwell County Sheriff's 512-398-6777. Repeat, 512-398-6777. Randy Kessler, you're the high-profile trial lawyer. You've tried many a case involving crashes in your day. That doesn't even make sense. I mean, there's so many questions, as Cheryl LaPointe just said. Why did the investigator go home and go to sleep when they couldn't find the victim? Why did the dad have to find his son's clothing? All of his clothes were off his body and 900 yards away. Why?
It's bizarre, Nancy. I mean, and I'm sorry, and the father should not have found any of that. It should have been, whether it's a crime investigation or a civil case, an accident investigation, that kind of stuff. How do you not find that? Especially when it's one that's not paper cutter kind of, you know, cookie cutter kind of case where, yep, someone ran a red light and here's what happened and the three witnesses. There are no witnesses, the time of day. I mean, this investigation should not have ended with the officer being in bed and the father having to go out there and find this evidence. Forget the emotional aspect of finding this stuff about a loved one. He's not an expert. That's what we have experts for.
I just don't understand what plausible explanation is there for a crash with damage to the car, front left fender, and back squished in to Kent Landry. This is Jason's dad. Please go to facebook.com/findJasonLandry. How did you think to walk 900 yards to find the clothing?
Well, I knew where the accident was when I'm driving up and down the road looking for my son, and I'm continuing to drive down the road looking more kind of off to the side, and frankly I expected to see Jason maybe walking down the road or someone, you know, I didn't know I was the only person out there looking. I mean, I'm going to look. It's, you know, it's my son. And I'm driving down this road, and as I'm driving along in my headlights, I see clothes, and I look at, I stop, and I'm like, what is that? You know, because as I'm driving along, I was driving slow because, oh gosh, I think I'd seen at least three different set of deer run in front of me, a coyote. This is only 3 miles out of Luling, but Luling ends very quickly, and you're in country. So I was driving slow thinking, you know, he probably swerved to avoid a deer, and I was going to avoid him also. And I see clothes. Well, I see something in front of me, and I stop and I look at the headlights, and I'm like, those are clothes. And then I look at the clothes, and I can recognize them as my son's. You know, some clothes is relatively distinctive. Jason wore, he loved novelty socks. So I knew the socks the minute I saw them. I think these were SpongeBob ones.
You just spoke to me, because my son's favorite pair of socks, one is bacon and the other sock is eggs. He loves crazy socks. So you see, I didn't realize the socks were there too.
Yes. Socks, t-shirt, socks, shorts, underwear, his slide sandals, and his watch.
And his watch. So it wasn't a theft. You know, Joe Scott,
yes, ma'am.
Just recently, you know, my sister drove all the way from California, didn't want to fly because of COVID, to Atlanta to see my mom and all of us. On the way back, she's a really careful driver, like overboard, like 20 miles an hour driver. A deer jumped out in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, I think it was. Totaled her car. But wouldn't there have been blood or some evidence of a deer? That's what I just heard Kent Landry hypothesize. Wouldn't we have evidence of that?
Yes. If the vehicle actually impacted the animal, you know, I've worked a lot of cases actually involving deaths of individuals that hit deer, and you'll find tufts of hair, you know, like in the grill, around the headlight housing and all this. But, you know, the impact on Jason's car is to the rear left. And my understanding is it was found against a tree. I think that what I'd like to ask Kent is, this is a rural, I'm familiar with this area.
How is it that you're familiar with every single area we ever talk about?
I travel a lot. True story, I've been to the Scheinerbach Brewery quite a bit. And so at any rate, it's an agricultural area, isn't it, Kent? And so the road is paved, but are there is it real gravelly on both sides, like soft shoulders, if you will?
Where this section of Salt Flat Road starts, paved right outside of Luling, but it turns into gravel. So where this accident occurred is actually all gravel.
Oh boy!
And this is an area that is actually sitting on a oil and gas field from about the 20s. So it's not farming as much as people run cattle, and there's a lot of oil field activity. It's out in the country.
Is the road real, like they refer to, washboardy? I mean,
it is washboard.
This is my question. I know that Jason was new to Texas State. You said it was his first semester. Had he made this trip home very many times?
No, coming from
San Marcos, because, you know, Salt Flat Road, it's well
north.
Wait
a minute, guys. Wait a minute. We're putting the cart before the horse here. Even if he was swerving to overcorrect, if he saw a deer and hit a tree, if that's what happened, where is he? Whether there's evidence of blood from a deer or a tuft of hair from a deer or paint from another car, that still doesn't tell me where is he.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joining me right now, Giovanni Masucci, Senior Digital Forensics Examiner. CEO of National Digital Forensics at natldf.com. Giovanni Masucci, thank you for being with us. What can we learn from any GPS in the car and from Jason's cell phone?
Yes, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
One of the big things is I'm going to look at, they found a phone. And so, and the phone, what I understand was between the driver's seat and the center console. So one of the things I'm going to look at is the phone, but also you mentioned the GPS. Depending on the car, make and model, and year, what type of infotainment system was located in that vehicle. And what I mean by infotainment system is I call that the communication center. So you can connect with it with your mobile device. And most people nowadays do a lot of work and talking using that infotainment system that's in the car, which also may have a navigation system, which can do your mapping, but also you can call, do text messages, search social media, and so on. So we've got two areas to look at. Taking back to the mobile phone, if I'm going to the scene, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull that into evidence, right? Start my chain of custody. And I'm going to look to see, once I bring it back to the lab, and of course you'd have to have a warrant to actually do the analysis part of it, depending on what's happened in the case. In this case, we have a missing individual, a young man. And so once the law enforcement obtains the search warrant to go ahead and do the phone, do the analysis on it, they're going to look for, depending on the type of tool that they use too. So what kind of search did this law enforcement agency do? Did they do just a physical search? Okay, meaning that they just opened up the phone and started looking at it, which we typically frown against that as a forensics individual. Now, you want to use a forensic software or a forensic tool to go ahead and look at the digital data and to actually, it's called, do an acquisition of that phone. So you're pulling as much data you can off that phone to next be able to analyze that data. So you're going to look for GPS data. You're going to look for location data. Was the phone location data on? Is the time and date stamp correct that's on the phone in the same zone period? Did he do any text messaging with anybody? You know, what?
I've got a little information on that to aid you in your analysis. With me, Giovanni Masucci with National Digital Forensics. To Kent Landry, this is Jason's dad, who's been searching for his son nonstop since his car was found on a lonely stretch of road on his way home for Christmas break. Around 11:24, I assume this is coming from the phone, or it may have been coming from the car navigational system itself.
Yes. Well,
Jason enters Luling on Texas Highway 80. He stops using the Waze app and opens up Snapchat, passes through Magnolia and East Austin, and that is where his digital footprint stopped.
That's the big question. I'm pretty comfortable saying, based on everything, that the last relatively certain, because there's almost no certainty here, but sitting at the light in Luling, where normally you would turn right if you were, you know, heading the correct way, you would turn right and then a couple blocks later you turn left and then you head out to I-10. Sitting at that light at about 11:24 is the last kind of point in time we feel pretty certain of what is going on. After that point, the 67 minutes until that young man finds his car wrecked on the side of the road, absolutely anybody's guess. And then, of course, the bigger question, the one I really care about, is what happened after that and where's my son? But no, after that point in time, it could be anything from a carjacking to a road. I mean, it could be, I just, you know, the.
How can he wreck and be completely gone in just 67 minutes? Guys, take a listen to our friend Jacob Rascon at KRPC Houston.
It was finally time for Jason Landry to come home for Christmas. He left Texas State in San Marcos Sunday night, but didn't get far. Just after midnight, the local sheriff's department got a call about a totaled sedan along Salt Flat Road. It was Jason's Nissan Altima, with his wallet, phone, and other belongings inside, but no Jason.
At the moment, they're using dogs to try to search for him by scent. They already tried a helicopter using the infrared light and didn't have any luck.
You can imagine Lisa Landry, his mother, is worried sick and in a bit of shock that this is all really happening.
He's alone. He doesn't have his phone or his wallet, and it's cold outside, and I don't know where he is, and I'd like to find him.
You're hearing Lisa, Jason's mother, to Jason Landry's dad joining me, Kent Landry. What toll is this search taking on your family?
Well, to say it's hard is the world's greatest understatement. You know, honestly, the thing that's keeping us going is the prayers of thousands of people. I mean, it's been amazing. You know, our faith and our family, we know that no matter what happened, we know God knows. And we're just continuing to hope and pray and trying to do the best we can given the circumstances.
Is it correct to Cheryl LaPointe, the cousin of the Landry family, you know her as the Gene Hunter, that a small amount of blood was found?
Yes, Nancy. There were spots of blood found on, believe, the band of his underwear, and also on a tag on an article of clothing. And I don't believe there was any blood found in the car when it was analyzed.
To Kent Landry, this is Jason's dad. A little bit of blood found on the band of his underwear in the front, the side, or the back?
It was found on the tag of his, he had two dots of underwear, blood, and by that I mean dot, like the tip of a eraser of a pen, pencil. On the tag on his shorts, which is, I guess, would be your, probably the left hip area on those shorts. Maybe right hip, one around your hip, and then right around the waistband at the top. So probably the car came to rest on the driver's side against a barbed wire fence. If Jason pushed the door open and tried to kind of scoot along the side of the door to get out, easily the barbed wire could have, pricked him and be that small amount of blood.
Just thinking about that, was the barbed wire ever tested, Mr. Landry?
I don't know the answer to that question. I do not know. The whole scene of the car accident, to my knowledge, has never been cordoned off, because I know there were pieces of his car there for weeks on end, and probably if you went out there right now, I don't know, people have been going by, I think, collecting them. I don't know if any will be left, but there were some last time I was there.
And no blood on the inside of the car?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, to you, Joe Scott Morgan, that speaks volumes to me. I think Mr. Landry's assessment is correct. If there's no blood on the inside, he had to get those tiny bits of bit of blood on his hip area from somewhere, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, the likely candidate, like Mr. Landry had mentioned, could be the barbed wire that the car was resting against. And this impact that he sustained in this vehicle could have disoriented him to a great degree. And it's still very curious, though, for me, as to why his clothing would be off of his person. My understanding was that the shirt that he was seen wearing earlier in the evening was actually found at the scene. Is that correct, Mr. Landry?
That's correct.
And we know that because of those released photos. Is the same shirt in the photos, Mr. Landry?
Yes, that certainly is a shirt. I know, because he was Snapchatting and Instagramming with one of his friends while he was packing up to leave, and it just changed into that shirt watching the video. And so I'm assuming that's what he was wearing. For me as a parent, you can't even imagine.
Is it the red T-shirt we're talking about?
Yes, ma'am. Just what why, it's an interesting intellectual exercise for a lot of people, but for me, it hurts my heart to think that my boy is, and it was cold. It was cold and windy. Why would he take his clothes off in the middle of the road in this kind of temperature? The airbags didn't deploy on the car. There's no side impact on this car, and this is an old car. Pastor, you don't get to make a lot of money, so kids get to drive old cars. This is a 2003, so there's no...
And I understand, Mr. Landry, that hundreds of hours of security videos from in and around Luling were reviewed. No evidence at all. What's the police working theory right now, Mr. Landry?
You'd have to check with them. I don't think just to be clear, the case was originally handled by Texas State Highway Patrol. About a week later, they turned it over to the Caldwell County Sheriff's Office. The Caldwell County Sheriff's Office, starting late, and of course with the issues with destruction of evidence and everything else, has kind of been running a race from behind, which is, I think, one of the reasons they've shared so much information so that they can get that one person to come forward who might shed light on something and make it make clear. Is this a tragedy in terms of someone disappearing? And they've searched for miles and miles. They started with dogs, people, drones, kind of a specialized mini predator drone, which is a new one. Helicopters, fixed-wing aircraft have all been used, and horses. Horse and ATV and stuff like that.
Where is this boy? Jason Landry, 21 years old, driving home for Christmas break. We find his car. We find his cell phone. We find his clothes, his backpack. But no Jason. Take a listen to KRPC Houston.
Hello, my name is Jason Landry, and I'm currently a sophomore at Texas State.
A few videos and hundreds of photos is all the Landry family has of their youngest child, Jason.
As a dad, I'm blessed. I mean, because I have memories. I have wonderful memories. It's just hard when you're sitting here thinking all you'll have of that child is memories.
Jason's car was found totaled, the keys still in the ignition, but there was no sign of Jason.
People ask me, what do I think happened? I'm like, I don't have the slightest idea.
Inside his office at Southminster Presbyterian Church, Pastor Kent Landry updates me on his son's missing persons case.
The Attorney General's office is in the process of forming a cold case division. We would love for them to take it on.
Kent says he hopes investigators will secure a geofence warrant.
We'd kind of, I think, help resolve the...
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.